Hello there once again, fellow peregrinos. Welcome to El Camino de Santiago Pilgrims Podcast, where we talk about planning, preparation and packing for walking the road to Santiago, as well as tips, tricks and hacks to make your journey along the way absolutely memorable and unforgettable. To that end, in this episode, we have the return of Aidan O'Boyle, who was here in episode 45. And we've brought you back, Aidan, because you've written a book.
Yes, yeah, I have indeed, yeah. Well, thank you for having me back. It's a real pleasure to chat to you again. And yeah, I have written a book, which is kind of funny sort of thing to say. It's been out now for a few months, and was very surreal, as I'm sure you know, when it was first published, or when I got the first kind of copy into my hands. But yeah, it's a short kind of reflection, I suppose, on the Camino that I had in a couple of years back, and the Camino Francés that I spoke to you about the first time you had me on. So yeah, it's a kind of very, very surreal thing to see it in print. But yeah,
last time I spoke to you, was episode 45, and you had no mention of writing a book back then. So yeah. We've had 40 episodes and half a year of no episodes. What's happened between then and now that made you want to do that?
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, it was something I had been working on at the time when I last spoke to you, but I was kind of keeping it all under wraps. There were a few people who knew. It was something I had mentioned with the guys who I met on the first Camino. The guys who I met on that Camino, I'd mentioned to them when we were on the Camino that I had thought about writing a book. But it was never kind of set in stone that I would. And then when I came back from that Camino in 2019, I kind of started jotting a few things down. And you know, obviously from looking at photographs and just kind of thinking about the whole experience, you have your own thoughts and feelings about it, right? So I started jotting a few things down and kind of putting a little bit of a kind of structure together. But there's obviously kind of a natural structure in the sense that the way that my book is laid out is it's just simply kind of day by day, with a couple of days kind of compressed together. So during the first lockdown, then I worked on it a bit more, and you know, although it's obviously been a difficult kind of couple of years for everyone, I was fortunate in that I was able to have the time to kind of work at it. And that being said, I mean, it's not Shakespeare, it's not a classic, but it's really, really nice to kind of glance at it every so often and reflect back. And that was really kind of the aim with it, was that not just myself, but the people I was with had the kind of opportunity to be able to just pick it up and open it and maybe read one of our stories and think, oh, that was that day or that was this day, you know?
So let's imagine. Mm-hmm. I want you to take me to one of those funny stories in your book. Tell us about that. Give us an example of what the reader is going to find in your book. And also that'll give a first-time pilgrim an impression of what they might experience as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, the story I told the last time I was on was about the night that we spent in the kind of abandoned house and the housekeeper and how she kind of appeared out of nowhere. So I won't tell that story again because I don't want to kind of repeat myself.
Go to episode 45, people, if you want to hear that one.
Yeah, but like, I suppose the story that I maybe would kind of like to share was just meeting the Camino family, you know, for the first time, you know, and how our paths crossed and how in a way sort of unlikely that was. And let me explain that in the sense that, you know, the four people I was with, Steve and Chris and Caitlin and Tyndall, and Steve has actually just finished the Portuguese Camino, so we'll probably give him a shout out for that. But the four people I was with on that Camino are still very, very, very dear friends. and I imagine always will be. And for us to all meet in the manner that we did, and you know, for us to come together, a lot of things kind of had to happen for that to take place. So, for example, I was actually supposed to be going on my Camino 2 days before I ended up going. I changed my flights. The girls, they were traveling together, and they weren't sure whether they were going to walk the Norte or the Francaise. Chris, for example, there's a few photos in the book, and one of them is the, you know, the famous sign saying Santiago de Compostela, 790 kilometers.
That's all.
And Chris was actually the person who took that photo of at that time. It would have been Steve, Caitlin, Pendle, myself, and another guy, Cormac from Ireland, who was there for a few days. Chris took that photo, and then he ended up just, you know, becoming part of the family. And I think that's kind of something that I tried to impress throughout the book, was the importance of, I suppose, human connection, and how kind of random in a way that can be, you know. Like, there's no reason that we should have met, and it would have been just as easy for us not to have met as to actually meet, and yet we did, and we had this amazing experience together that I've written about, and we're now, you know, lifelong friends.
Yeah.
And that's kind of an underlying message that I tried to, whether I was successful in it or not, but that I tried to kind of present the whole time during the book. And it was something I always had in mind as I was writing too. I don't know about you, but like when I write, I kind of do it in fits and starts. So I maybe have a week where I'll write, you know, 10 pages a day or whatever, and I'll be really productive, and then I won't touch it for maybe 2 weeks and come back to it. And you know, it was always a kind of a good reference point to go back to if I hadn't been writing maybe for a while, was, okay, well, how do I feel about the relationships that we formed, the people that we met, and everything that kind of entailed both then and now.
What influence did the people, did your Camino family have on you?
Oh my God. Like, I can't stress it enough, like, enormous, you know, like when I say that they changed my life, I think we changed each other's lives. You know, they're just amazing, amazing, amazing.
Give me
people,
a specific example of how that chance encounter, that the synergy of the searching souls all meeting together, you know, the improbability of it.
Right.
And yet there's something that you took away from it, by the sounds of it. What have you taken away from one of them, from all of them? Give us a specific example, because I'm sure that many pilgrims that have walked it before will be able to relate to that. And it'll, I guess, for those that haven't walked it before, maybe though, for those that are a little bit maybe shy, maybe not as, maybe a bit introverted, and not as, they don't fit as easily into a social situation in normal everyday life. So how that, you know, what could be the push that will get them to open up that little bit more, so they can meet people on the Camino?
Well, I remember, if we're talking about a specific example, I remember about, it would have been about 6 days in, so I think we were leaving Estella, and I read about this in the book. Tyndall had gotten very sick during the night, and her and Caitlin weren't able to walk. Well, she wasn't able to walk, and Caitlin stayed with her, as all good friends do, you know. And so it was just Steve and Chris and I, the three of us, walking that day together. And it was very strange, you know, because even though we'd only been together a few days, we were used to walking as a kind of, as a group, or at least, you know, even if we kind of spread out along the trail throughout the day, we'd all agree, right, okay, we'll stop here for lunch, or we'll stop here for, you know, a break or something like that, you know. But I remember that day, we were walking into Estella, Steve and Chris and I, and it was raining. Like, I mean, it was teeming with rain.
But you're used to being from Ireland, right?
You felt it wasn't too different for me, you know. It made me feel very very at home. But
I think we did these gags last time on the previous interview, so we need to come up with some new material, don't we? But anyway, carry on, Aidan, sorry.
No, you're okay. And we were walking into the town, and we were kind of just talking about, you know, the kind of the Camino, and one of the conversations we were having was, well, do you really think that it actually is the kind of bones of St. James in the cathedral in Santiago? And I think the conclusion that we sort of came to was, whether it is or it isn't, doesn't necessarily matter, because it's not so much as to whether they're his bones or not, but it's as to what the kind of, that sort of image has inspired, or that kind of concept has inspired, right? For, you know, hundreds of years, and has millions of people. And I think one of the things that we talked about was that on the Camino, the majority of people are just kind of naturally good, you know? So, like, for example, if on the trail someone trips and falls in front of you, right, you go over and help them. You know, you don't even think about it. You just go and ask if they're okay. You know, maybe give them some water or something like that. But would everyone do that in the normal world? You know, if you were walking to work in the morning at home and someone slipped in front of you, would you stop and ask if they're okay? You might, of course, but not everyone would. Whereas in the Camino, I think people are inherently good. Mm. There's a real kind of, yeah, there's a real goodness. There's a real kind of positive sort of, I don't know, spirit.
The more you're more likely to on the Camino, yeah.
Right. That encourages you to kind of, to help. So it brings out, what I'm trying to say is, I think it really brings out the best mm-hmm. in you. And that was, I remember that conversation, and I still think about it a lot. And, you know, trying to apply that to wider life is a valuable kind of lesson, I suppose, that I learned from being with the guys and from being on the Camino, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And just for a bit of context to your yes. book and your Camino as well. So it's called, because I should have mentioned this at the start, but I was hoping you were going to mention it, but you were very humble and unassuming. And I thought, well, he hasn't mentioned the name of his own book, so I'm going to do it now. So it's called The Inner Beauty of a Pilgrim Soul, A Journey on El Camino de Santiago. It's got, so far, 13 ratings, five stars out of five, doing brilliant. And let me just give a quick background for the listener. So the blurb, the description, the back of the book. How would you spend your university summers? Magaluf, interrailing, clubbing? How about an 800-kilometer hike across an ancient pilgrimage route on your own with people you have never even met through places you have never even heard of? So there may be people... 50% of the listeners of this podcast are in America. Maybe they're thinking about going to California. Maybe they're thinking about going to Mexico, Cancun for a beach holiday. Yeah. Maybe the Brits that are listening are thinking of going to Spain, Magaluf. Why, Aidan, should they choose the Camino instead? And why did you choose the Camino instead?
Why did I choose it, I suppose, is kind of how I'll tackle that one. I suppose I chose it, and again, I touched briefly on this the last time, but I'll maybe go into a bit more detail. I chose it because I think I was at a point in my life, I was at university at the time, where I just needed that kind of headspace, you know, and real kind of a chance to reflect. And I don't want to make that sound too kind of worldly, you know, I wasn't coming down with problems. You know, I'm very fortunate, you know, I have a loving family and great friends, and, you know, I was loving university and all the rest, but I was also under a little bit of pressure, a bit of stress. And I remember the day that I booked the flights to go, I booked the flight out and didn't book the flight home because I wasn't sure. And I just thought, I felt it was like a weight off my shoulders nearly. And the reason I say that is because although I wasn't sure what to expect, I knew that I would have at least 30 days plus of time and space and an opportunity to reflect. And don't get me wrong, I love a big crazy holiday as much as the next person. You know, I love going out with my friends and, you know, going on holidays with my friends and, you know, going to bars and stuff. And, you know, that's great. And if that's your thing, then absolutely go and do it. But the Camino for me is one of life's great experiences. You know, it really is. It's like something that you really have to experience. You just, even if you think that it's not for you, you know, even if you think the thought of walking 800 kilometers is the worst punishment you could be subjected to, that's not the point. The point is that you meet people and you have these experiences that you just can't replicate anywhere else, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, with the benefit of hindsight, there is no other holiday I could think of kind of that I would really rather go on. Like if someone said to me tomorrow, okay, you have 6 weeks of no, you know, you don't have to work, you don't have to worry about anything, what are you going to do? Without a doubt, it would be the first thing I would do is hop on a plane and fly to Spain and start the Camino again.
Yeah, I mean, you're echoing the thoughts of Pascal Auger, who was episode 27, I think, something like that. He created his own pilgrimage trail in Canada. And he said the Camino de Santiago is the best present you could ever give to yourself. So yes, you're saying definitely the same thing in pretty much just different words. Now, yes, in the book, I asked you to send me a sample of the book, and you sent me the really important moment in everyone's Camino, if they're doing the Camino, yeah, Francés, and that is when you get out to Cruz de Ferro. Please, can you, yeah, explain the importance of Cruz de Ferro? I mean, you say, the stone I placed at the foot of Cruz de Ferro came from my beach in Port Stewart and stayed in my bag the whole time. From the moment I collected it to the moment I placed it on the ground at Cruz de Ferro, it was not touched by another pair of hands. It, yes, gives me comfort that it's still there today. Why does it give you comfort? What did you feel at that moment, and why does it give you comfort now?
Yeah, I remember, again, I remember that day so well. We left Fontsibadon and we were walking to Ponferrada, and Cruz de Ferro, as you say, you know, you come across it fairly soon after leaving Fontsibadon. It's a few kilometers. And it was like in Galicia, you know, it just rained a lot, but it's so lush, it's beautiful, you know, it's really green and it's kind of, it feels just like alive, you know, especially in the rain. You know, the rain brings something out in the kind of the trees and the forest that you don't really get otherwise. And we left the albergue that morning, and it was like this, and at that stage there were seven of us. It was like the seven of us kind of against the world, nearly, you know. It was like we felt like real sort of adventurers. And Cruz de Ferro is so significant, you know. It's so the high point, and you know, I suppose it's a physical representation of the thousands of people who have walked in the trail before you. You know, you see the rocks and you see, you know, maybe mementos to loved ones who have passed away, or you see, you know, maybe people who have left quite personal things. So it's incredibly personal, you know. People are sharing, are kind of laying their lives, are bearing their souls nearly, you know, in the items that they leave at the foot of Cruz de Ferro. And it's not, and again, I reference this in the book, it's not really a religious thing. I am not a devout Christian by any stretch of the imagination. But I suppose it's the sense of companionship and like you said, the stone that I left at Cruz de Ferro came from my beach at home in Port Stewart, and I love home, you know. Home is, like anyone, home is home, and I love going home, and I love going to the beach, and no one touched it from when I put it in my bag until when I set it down. And you know, it's still there now, I presume, or it's close by anyway. And just knowing that it's there just gives me a real sort of comfort point, I suppose. Like I remember leaving the stone there, and it was really emotional, you know, like the seven of us were really emotional. It was a very powerful kind of moment, and there was no one else about, and you know, we just kind of realized, wow, look at what we're doing, like this is amazing, you know. And the sky was there were clouds and bits of, you could see bits of the sky and you couldn't see other bits, and it was really wild. And it was just something that when I laid the stone down, and then I said that prayer, the short prayer, and I felt like a weight off my shoulders, and like I was leaving things behind that you know, post Camino, I wouldn't maybe worry about as much, if that makes sense. I'm not sure if I'm explaining myself right, but
so let me kind of probe a bit further then.
Yeah, of course.
And maybe that'll open up your thoughts a bit more. So elaborating a little bit more upon Cruz de Ferro, which you've beautifully illustrated there, is like a physical representation of the thousands of pilgrims that have walked before you. I really like that. Where each stone is represented by the thousands of stones, on that mound at the foot of the pole of Cruz de Ferro represents the thousands of the pilgrims that have come before us, possibly millions. And the stone is meant to be carried from one's hometown, as you said. This act, as you write, represents, in your words, the washing away of all burdens you carried with you on the Camino. So there's now this bit of distance between now and when you walk the Camino.
Yeah.
Do you feel that you have, and that act did wash away the burdens? Have you felt that release has, it's been constant, that feeling?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, everyone is always going to have problems the whole way through your life. You know, you're never going to be completely maybe serene or at peace. But, you know, at that point in my life, yeah, I really felt that it did. And it's something that I've carried with me since. That sort of feeling of, I suppose, tranquility.
Yeah.
And that feeling of connection, and that feeling of, yeah, kind of being a little bit more at peace with yourself and who you were. And like, I mean, I'm 22 now. At the time I was 19, and you know, you do a lot of growing up in those kind of 3 years, I think. You know, I'm working full time now, and it's a very busy sort of world, very busy sort of life, which is great. You know, I love being busy and I love having things to do, but every so often I find myself needing to kind of take a step back and reflect, and, you know, have a bit of, give myself kind of a sense of perspective. I think so. Yeah. And again, I mentioned it in the book, like, it's not just the kind of connection to the people who have come before you, but also the people who, you know, are coming after you, you know, and what sort of experience will they have? Will they feel something similar? Will they not feel anything? What does it mean to them? You know,
talk us through in the book where you, I guess we're all going to experience moments just like in life, like we do on the Camino, where you encounter that difficulty. And obviously in life now, when you experience hard times, you can draw strength from that moment on Cruz de Ferro, when you place that stone from your beach. So what, in the book, talk us through a moment where maybe your lowest or your toughest mental or physical challenge on the Camino, how you got through it, how you recommend those who are going to experience similar challenges can get through it and draw strength as well.
Well, the first thing that springs to mind when you ask me that is a particular day on the Meseta. And as I'm sure you know, they say that the Meseta is the the mentally challenging part of the Camino Francés is that the kind of middle third will really challenge you in a way that you maybe haven't been before, because of the kind of the starkness of the landscape and the long stretches between towns and the heat. You know, at that time of the year it was so warm. And
while we're there, just stay where we are. Can you explain the first third and the last third as well, just for the listener?
Yes, of course. Yeah, and I'll try my best. Well, they say that the first third is physical challenge, you know, the Pyrenees and everything that entails, and also kind of getting your body used to walking miles and miles every day. The middle third, as I said, is the mental challenge, and the final third, I suppose, in when you enter Galicia, is a kind of spiritual challenge, or I think I'm right about that.
That's correct. Yeah, that's what's commonly thought.
And Galicia as a kind of region of Spain, it's really magical, you know, the old buildings and the stone and the forest and it's very like Ireland as well. It's really, you know, it's Celtic, right? So it's really similar to home. That was important too, you know, that kind of connection, you know.
And so putting you back into that middle third then, what was the challenging moment?
Yes. So I remember this day and we had taken the Via Romana, and which is, you know, was kind of a bit of an alternative route. And we split off from the kind of, I suppose, the main Camino Francés, or the kind of most popular path. And from when we split off until 2 days later when we rejoined, we only saw like three other pilgrims. You know, which, as I'm sure you know, for the Camino Francés, the most popular Camino, is very strange, especially for that time of year. You know, it was May; it was a very popular time of the year to be walking. But we didn't see anyone really, apart from each other, for kind of 2 days, and it was so warm and really just, as I said, like the meseta is just like, you know, you look up and there's nothing. You know, it's just flat for miles and miles and miles. And you know that you just have to kind of keep trudging on until you reach where you're staying. But I remember this particular day anyway. And the town we were staying in, I'm sorry, I can't remember the name. Again, I do talk about it in the book. We all got there and checked into the albergue, and it was a Donativo albergue, and it was, you know, it was lovely. It was nice and clean and all the rest, and very welcoming. But the five of us then had a bit of a wash, and we went and we sat outside the albergue, and we must have sat in silence for about an hour and a half or 2 hours, not talking, just the five of us just sitting there. And I think we had all just found that day so difficult and so nearly kind of, I don't want to say traumatic, that maybe sounds a bit kind of dramatic, but we had really been challenged by the heat and the lack of other pilgrims and the kind of feeling of what the hell are we doing this for, you know? And in that moment, we really got through that by kind of relying on each other. And that was kind of what I would say to people, is that don't be afraid. Don't be on your own, you know? Don't be afraid to be weak and to feel that you're not strong enough to do this, and don't be afraid to ask for help, you know. And that help might just be a conversation with someone, it might be asking someone for some water, it might be, I don't know, you know, giving someone a hand up a tough hill or something like that, you know. And that day we, the five of us, kind of relied on each other. It's funny, like it's a really prominent memory, you know, sitting outside that albergue and just, we didn't talk. It was really bizarre. Like we just sat there in kind of silence for, as I say, quite some time, just kind of thinking about what we had just done that day, you know?
Yeah, I think the story you're telling is really important to bear in mind for people that have never done the Camino before, because yes, it's a great adventure. Yes, you could well end up having the time of your life, and it's very true that you may never experience something like this ever again. There are going to be days and moments like the moments and days you have just described where you might be saying to yourself, I could be on that beach in Magaluf, or I could be on that beach in Mexico, I could be skiing in Aspen, or I could be down in Florida, you know, and here I am walking in this dust bowl in the middle of Spain, 40 degree heat, my knees are hurting, my ankles are hurting, I'm hungry, I'm tired. What? Why did I do this to myself? Yeah. You know, you may well have those moments, but tell us, let's turn that on his head. I mean, tell us a moment where you felt the complete opposite of that, you know, a very triumphant, a personal victory in the book, an instrumental, pivotal moment in the book where maybe that all seemed worthwhile.
There's a couple of things that spring to mind. One, and I wrote about this. So about 3 weeks into the Camino, two of my two oldest friends from home, Connor and Cormac, came out to walk the last sort of 2 weeks with us. And they're just they're just two great guys. They're just like my two oldest friends. We lived together at university. We kind of hung about together growing up. Like, they're just my two best mates. And they came out to walk the last 2 weeks with us, and they slotted seamlessly into the group. And I remember at one point we were just coming into Galicia. We weren't too far from kind of, you know, entering into Galicia, and we had just conquered this enormous hill, enormous. And we got to the top, and I happened to be with the two guys at that point of the day. And the three of us have been friends now for, you know, 12, 13 years maybe. And we got to the top of this hill, and there was this incredible view, and we kind of dumped our bags off and just had a wee look or whatever. And we all started laughing. We couldn't really figure out why. And Connor said something along the lines of, how the hell did we end up here? You know, how did we get here? We have been friends for so long. We've done a lot together. You know, they've been there for me at, you know, the hardest times of my life. I've been there for them. But how did we get to this point where we're, you know, at the top of this hill in Spain, walking miles and miles every day? And it was real. It was really like, it was like a proper kind of elation, you know. It was really like a real high moment, you know, like we had a real kind of adrenaline and endorphins and everything was flowing, and we just were having a great time.
But
and
also, like, the connection of three mates sharing that special moment.
Exactly. Like, that was just, I remember that. And and I suppose something else would be the,
and your bond really strengthens in that moment, you know, your friendship strengthens.
Exactly, you know.
The bond between you gets stronger, and, you know, you're, and that's something that you guys will always have together.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there are very few people who you can say are confident will be your friends for your whole life, you know. There are very few people you can say, you know, when my time comes, they're going to be the ones who will carry me there, you know. And I think Connor and Cormac, for me, are two people who will just always be there, you know.
When you say carry you there, you mean home from the pub on a Saturday night, right?
Well, that too. They've done that plenty of times as well. But then I suppose the other kind of moment, and it's an obvious one, but it's, you know, it's true, is the final day into Santiago, you know, and the everything that entails. But in this sense, I actually, our night before stood out to me nearly more than actually entering the square, because the night before we stayed in an albergue that wasn't long opened. It only opened a few weeks prior, and it was run by a lovely couple, and they were so, oh my god, they were so generous.
What was the name of this albergue, and where was it?
I can't remember. I'm going to try and find it, because it was really, really, really good. 2 seconds.
No, that's okay. I mean, you keep finding that. And all I can say, and I'm just going to elaborate a bit more upon the points that you've made there, what I think the story of your friends brings to the potential first-time pilgrim is that if you can take a friend with you, a family member, and you can, and it is fertile ground for strengthening that bond.
Oh, absolutely.
So you could say that maybe that's how friendships can be made or broken on the Camino. And I think not only can you make new ones, but you can also strengthen and deepen old ones. And like you said, for those moments of if you are afraid of walking alone in places like the Meseta, which is supposedly the mental challenge, then because you've made that physical adjustment, then why not try and twist a friend's arm to come with you? You know, if you're listening to this thinking, not sure about this, you know, I'm a bit scared, or there's you might need some moral support. Is there a friend? Is there a friend you could get to come with you, a family member? Yeah. So I agree. That. Yeah.
I haven't been able to come on the name of that albergue, but it was in Arua. So we were staying there anyway that evening, and there was no one else staying in the albergue. It was really bizarre. I think because of the play, Arua is about 25k from Santiago. So a lot of people either go slightly further on, so they have a shorter walk the next morning, or they maybe split it up into 2 days. But we said, oh no, it's okay, we'll just...
I think that place actually called Arzua with a Z, A-R-Z-U-A, Arthua. I was just checking that out because it didn't sound right to me.
That's okay.
I was there not long ago, to be honest with you, because I did the Camino Inglés. So, but we walked from the airport to Santiago, which was fun. Sorry, carry on. Just wanted to...
It's okay. And we were staying anyway in this albergue, and we had a nice dinner and just had a really good time. And I suppose it was the awareness that this was maybe, although yes, we had a couple of days in Santiago together, this was the last night we had where we would be getting up the next morning and walking, you know? And this was the last night we had where we were, I suppose, still reaching or stretching for our destination, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And it was just a really nice, beautiful evening. And yeah, we just had a really good time together. And it's just something that sticks out to me, not for any particular reason. It wasn't anything that happened.
I mean, writing the book, Aidan, how did you feel? Because I know when I write, if I'm recounting memories, sometimes I can be sat up, not being dramatic here, it's just telling the truth. I can be sat at my computer retelling the story that it all made me cry. It can make me laugh. How did you feel putting pen to paper on your experience?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm exactly the same. And as they say, because I did a good chunk of the writing during the first lockdown that we had, I tended to sit up quite late writing. Like, I would maybe sit up until 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning writing. And it was always really intensely personal, in the sense that between trying to kind of obviously sort out the stories and kind of structure the book, you were rethinking everything, so you were kind of experiencing it again. Obviously in a different manner, with some hindsight, with knowing everything that you knew, or that I knew. There were more than once where I would be writing and I would get emotional and, think about what they mean to me and what I hopefully mean to them. And I think that's good. I think that the opportunity to reflect on everything that happened and everything that we went through was a real sort of gift. It was really, I felt really fortunate that that I was able to get the chance to sort through the stories again, look at all the photos. Steve had made a kind of video, about a half an hour long kind of video sort of montage of you know, all the photos, and let's watch it, you know, and yeah, it was very emotional. It really was.
Let me put you into one of the most important moments on everyone's pilgrimage.
Yeah.
Walking into the square in Santiago. What can you, let me ask you a direct question. What can you smell when you walk into that square?
Oh,
you guys
wow.
are right. You need to think about these things.
Yeah.
Smell. It's a silly question, I know, but
no, I know.
I always ask myself when I'm writing stuff, like, what do you smell or what do you hear? What's the most, what's the sense that, what, which of your senses has been stimulated the most?
Yeah, what did I smell? Well, I remember going down.
It's not Cormac's body odor, is it? Or
no, not at that time anyway. I remember
Cormac's feet.
Yeah, I remember going down. What stood out to me about Galicia was the eucalyptus.
Oh,
tree.
Yes, now we're talking. You know? Yeah.
They and you know what's like so
it's
sharp,
strong,
it's really distinctive.
Yeah.
You know. And the forests are beautiful,
it's
and they're
mouthwash,
really,
isn't it? In a way,
yeah, it is. Yeah, and it's like really like it's just the forests are just amazing. You know, they're really amazing places. And but I remember anyway going into Santiago. The smell, that's interesting. Well, from Monte de Gozo onwards, I suppose you got the sense of yes, you were going into this modern, bustling, dynamic city, but as you kind of wind your way through the sort of suburbs and I suppose the more industrialized bits, you get to the old city, and you know, you walk up the old in the cobble streets and narrow streets and, you know, sloping streets, and there's just the feeling of wow, I've arrived. I remember the smell of the coffee shops going down just as you go under the archway.
The fish shops as well, as you walk down that
shop,
street.
Yeah,
that goes,
yeah. And
the fish restaurant, should I say, not fish shops, fish restaurants.
You can hear the guy playing the bagpipes.
There you go. That's a brilliant, yeah, that's a,
yeah,
a brilliant,
that's a really,
yeah,
really distinctive. And just as well, just you can nearly hear people's sort of happiness, you know.
Yes.
And everyone reacts differently when they get into the square, right? Some people cry, some people fall on their knees, some people laugh, some people don't really have any sort of reaction. But if you just stand and look around, like it's an amazing place. If you were people watching, you know, if you just sat in that square all day and just watched people arrive, you would see so
you really much, feed off the happiness, yeah.
You really would, yeah. And one of the things that we had done as well, actually, which I should mention, is that Steve had filled half filled a bottle at Arache, you know, the Fuente de Vino, and he carried that bottle of the red wine in it the whole way.
Really?
So one of the first things we did was we all had a swig out of the bottle.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And you know, it was red wine that had been in a bottle in his bag for 5 weeks, so it maybe wasn't the kind of finest red wine that you'd ever drink, but I remember that as well.
It was a bit sour, wasn't it? A bit vinegary.
Yeah, it certainly was. But honestly, like, and even thinking about it now, I'm getting emotional. You know, I'm kind of welling up here. It was just one of the best things that I will ever do. Like, if I live until I'm 100 years old, I will remember every day that I spent with those people. And I remember it so well, you know, I really do. Like, I remember not just like kind of our immediate Camino family, but the wider sort of family. You know, there was a family called the Lurias, Scott and Jane, and their daughter Hope, and Hope's best friend Mari. And we were very close to them the whole time as well. And they were just like, I mean, Jane and Scott were just like the nicest couple ever. They're from Vermont, and they just like looked after us. Like, Jane would like bring me food and stuff during the day, and like she was like my mother on the Camino, you know. And like, I remember being with them, and you know, we went out that evening when we arrived in Santiago. We all had our meal together. Then we went out together, and you know, there are so many things that kind of hard to put them all in, you know.
But I think you're making a really nice point, and something that people that have never walked the Camino before, which is, I think, what I try to make this podcast specifically for.
Yeah.
I try to put myself in the shoes of someone that's never walked the Camino, that, or maybe they're looking for some tips or whatever, but to take into account that there is a really, to not play it down, it's a special moment. Yes, it is about the journey, not the destination, but to celebrate that arrival and to absorb it, take it all in.
And you know what I think it is?
Imprint it on your heart and soul.
Yeah.
And make sure you take the time to celebrate, if and where possible, with the people that you've met along the way. And sorry, exactly, Aidan, you were going to say something more there.
No. Just to add to what you said. There are very few times in your life, or maybe in the world, where you will just experience that kind of sense of commonality and that surge of just like just real goodness, you know, real real. Everyone wants the best for you when you're on the Camino, you know. No one wants you to not enjoy yourself. No one wants you to not have a good time. And that kind of comes to a head maybe in the square, where you just look around and you just see all these different reactions, and you realize
it's expressed in many different ways, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's kind of a personification of everything that had been going on for the past, however long it's been since you began your pilgrimage, you know.
I think, I couldn't agree more. And just before we finish, what legacy has the Camino left on your life?
Oh, wow. Huge. I mean, my the work I'm in at the minute, I'm actually in the new year doing a three-part radio series about old pilgrimage paths in Ireland. And that was because of the Camino. That was why the interest, the idea grew. And that's what I'll be kind of drawing on when I'm doing that.
Lovely. So, I think you've just given me some ideas there for my next trip.
So that's a very, I suppose, very physical.
So it's opened up other Caminos, professional Caminos for you as well.
Right.
Great.
But, in terms of it, I suppose a more metaphorical legacy, if you like, it's something I turn back to, if not every day, then at least every other day. You know, I think about it all the time. I mean, all the time. And, you know,
it's like a before and after part of your life, isn't it?
Yeah, really. And it's a real sort of bookmark, if you like. You know, life pre-Camino and life post-Camino.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm still listening.
Pre and post-COVID, pre and post-Camino.
Exactly, yeah. PC and BC, or BC and PC, sorry, I should say. But it's, you know, I wouldn't be the person who I am today without those experiences, you know? I wouldn't be where I am, both in terms of what I'm doing with my life, but also where I am as a person within myself, you know.
Can you tell us about the name of the, you said you're starting a radio show?
Yes. Well, my work, I work in kind of Irish language media. And the show will be three parts. It'll be on BBC Radio Ulster here in Ireland. And it'll be in Irish. And it's called Turish, and Turis in Irish means journey, and Turish is the plural, means journeys, and there'll be three episodes based on three different old pilgrimage paths in Ireland. So I'm really looking forward to that, and obviously I'll be kind of drawing on my experiences.
So we won't be able to understand it.
Well, you can have a listen and see how much you get, you know. This could be at the start of your journey to learn Irish.
Do you know what? I genuinely would love that. I've got to be honest and open and say I probably won't have the time, and it probably isn't going to serve me in enough areas of my life to give it that time. But I certainly would like to know about the names of the trails, or tell us briefly about the trails.
Of course, of course. So the first episode is going to be based on what's called Tullaha Beglia. Tullaha Beglia, or in English, Tulla Begley, is an area of Donegal in the northwest of Ireland. And there's a very old graveyard there. And in that area, people from a neighbouring sort of town, years and years ago, before they had their own graveyard in their town, they used to carry their dead over the mountain into the graveyard in the neighbouring town. It's kind of like a 20-mile journey. But these traditions developed around it. You know, they would stop at certain places and stop at certain houses. And, you know, in Ireland, the notion of the wake and of celebrating the life of the person is a really important part of a death ritual. And that kind of grew around that. So that's going to be episode one. Episode two is called Turris. Is based on Turris Columbkille, or St. Columbkille's way. So Columbkille is one of the three patron saints of Ireland, along with St. Patrick and St. Bridget. And there's an area again in Donegal called Glen Columbkille, or Glan Columbkille, and that's where Columbkille was from. And again, a pilgrimage has grown around that. You know, there's a church there to him, and there are different stations there, and there are certain things, much like leaving the stone at Cruz de Faro, that you have to do it at each station. You know, you have to take some clay from a certain bit, and you have to look through this kind of stone, and you know, there's all these sorts of notions that have grown up around it. So I'm going to be doing that. And episode three will be on Balach Neve Padraig, or St. Patrick's Way. And St. Patrick is, you know, world famous St. Patrick. And that goes from Downpatrick, which is where St. Patrick's tomb is, to Armagh, or the other way. And Armagh is the kind of ecclesiastical capital of Ireland, is how kind of people describe it. It's where, you know, the churches are based. But again, you know, people walk these pilgrimages who aren't Christian, Catholic or Protestant. They walk them for something, to find something greater within themselves. And that's kind of what I'm going to be hopefully exploring in the series.
Is there a location on the web that might be translated into English with some basic info on this? If there isn't, think about it and get it to me, and I can share it with the podcast listeners, because I think there'll be a lot of interest in this. I'm interested in it, most definitely, since it's so close to home. Uh-huh. And so if there isn't, please get a basic one in Facebook or something, just a page where people can go on to. And I think you'll be. I think there'll be a lot of people interested, Aidan. Especially when you think about the connections of Ireland with America as well.
Yeah, and of course.
Most of the listeners of this podcast are in America. Yeah, so I think it'll be some spin-off of the Camino de Santiago that could be. Okay, if a lot of them have already done that, then maybe a trip back home to do, you know, to with their heritage, and mix two birds with one stone in a way. So,
of course. Okay. Well, I'll certainly have a think about that. And once it's actually recorded and stuff, I'll be able to kind of some publicity around it and all that.
Yeah, that'll be fantastic. You know? Aidan, we always like to finish the podcast with a little bit of with a bit of levity. And so I'm going to put you on the spot here, because I normally have like another kind of list of questions that I ask, and I thought I'd do something different with this podcast and just kind of talk about your book, because I want to support you and hope you're successful. And no, honestly, it's you're giving me your time, and there's a lot of nice takeaways for the listener as well from this chat. So first of all, let's remind the listener before we do that. And while I'm reminding the listener of the name of your book, where they can find it, I'd like you to be thinking about a song that reminds you of the Camino, or a song that you put on to get you in the mood to walk your next one, if you're going to walk another one. So you'd be thinking about that, and I'm just going to remind the listeners now. So
okay,
it's Aidan O'Boyle, The Inner Beauty of a Pilgrim Soul, A Journey on El Camino de Santiago. So please look that up on Amazon and just go into the search bar, type it in on Amazon, and please support Aidan as he begins his fledgling clerk career in the media. Give me a song.
Give you a song. Well, the song that we, one of the songs that we sang on our Camino a lot was Hero by Enrique Iglesias.
No. Let's go back. Let's turn around. Let's reverse. You've got to choose another one.
And there's a video of Steve and I doing that twice. Once in Burgos in a karaoke bar there, and once in Santiago when we were finished. So that, I suppose, for my I'm nearly ashamed to admit that is the song that reminds me of the Camino.
You've just given me an idea of something that could be a karaoke Camino. You do karaoke every single night and stop. You'll probably never be welcome. I'll probably be never welcome back. But no, okay. So that's an unusual choice. But I guess you walk 800 miles, 1,000 kilometers, yeah, plus. You're a hero. So why not? Now, the rule is, Aidan, since you've chosen such a daring song, you're going to have to sing it. I mean, just as if you were there.
You've
got to sing us out. This is your career in the media. Come on.
You wouldn't have a single listener if I had to sing this out. They were just on. You'd regret it. It would be the end of the podcast.
I would actually sing this with you or get it started, but I think anytime I hear the words Enrique Iglesias, I just kind of, it's not really my cup of tea, so I'll switch off. Is it like, you can be my hero, baby? Something
that's
like that.
The one.
Is that
the exactly, one? Yeah.
Come on, go for it, Aidan. Come on.
No, I couldn't. I couldn't do it. It would really, I will send you the video, and if you like,
we'll attach that to the podcast. We'll do that as the media for the podcast.
All right, that sounds good.
That's a deal. So, Aidan O'Boyle, it's Aidan Boyle, not Aidan O'Boyle. I don't know why.
My English name is Aidan Boyle. In Irish, it's Aidan O'Boyle.
Okay.
Don't worry. It's a tricky one.
It's because you signed on to Skype with me as Aidan Boyle, but I keep seeing your name as O'Boyle on the titles for the book. So that's why I was a little bit confused. So because I'm reading your name one place and I'm reading it another. Aidan O'Boyle, or in your Irish, the Irish way?
So in English, it's Aidan Boyle. In Irish, it's Aidan O'Boyle.
And how do we say Buen Camino in Irish?
Well, the kind of blessing is Gonieri and Boher Legach in Ilarach.
That's a lot. That's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So Gonieri and Boher Legach in Ilarach, or that translated means kind of may the road be good to every pilgrim.
That is beautiful. Can we hear it again in Irish?
Yes, of course. So it's Gonieri and Boher Legach in Ilarach.
Perfect. I cannot top that. That is the perfect way to end the podcast. Go out and get Aidan's book, everybody. Aidan, thank you so much for your time and good luck with the new projects in the new year.
Thank you. And thank you for having me.